We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This episode is brought to you by Decoy Wines of Sonoma, California. As you gather with family and friends this summer, experience the best of wine country with Decoy by Duckhorn. Winemaker Tyson Wolf spends every vintage focused on harvesting grapes and crafting wines from the finest vineyards. Whether it's our flagship Cabernet or crisp and refreshing Rosé, Decoy has just the wine for your discerning taste. Ask for us at your local wine shop or visit decoywines.com/celebrate to locate our wines near you. Whether you're firing up the grill, hosting an alfresco get-together, or enjoying the warm summer nights, let Decoy by Duckhorn elevate your occasion.
Hunter Henry's out for the season. Brandon Marshall signs with the Seahawks, and we're playing Buy, Sell, Hold on RotoViz Radio. I'm Dave Cabin. This is RotoViz Radio, brought to you by the FFPC. I'm joined, as always, by Matthew Friedman, Editor-in-Chief of Fantasy Labs, part of the Action Network. What's going on, Matt?
Not much. Just traveling. Right now, as I'm recording this, I am in a hotel in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. So it's good. Stuff's going well.
Oh, my gosh. Wait, if you had mentioned that to me, I would have come up to Portsmouth. We could have done this live in person.
Where do you live?
I live in Bedford, New Hampshire, so like right next to Manchester.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's fortuitous. I guess at some point we will end up getting together. Who knows? Maybe it could even happen on this trip, although I kind of doubt
it.
Because a lot of my time is spoken for it. I'm pretty lazy. I don't like to drive. But yeah, maybe. Who knows?
Well, that's fine. Yes. And, you know, I'm not the type of person that goes out of my way to make social interaction. But my wife and I got married in Portsmouth, so we spent a lot of time there. So at some point in the future, maybe.
Oh, wow. Where did you guys get married? We just derailed the show. But where did you guys get married in Portsmouth?
Portsmouth Harbor Events.
Okay. Awesome.
So, right. Yeah. It's like right when you enter into Portsmouth. It's like one of the first hotels on the right, actually. I forget the name of the street, but it's like the first street that you can take a right on, like once you see the big pile of salt and like they're doing all the work there now.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay. So my wife and I lived in Portsmouth. The reason why we're visiting, we lived in Portsmouth for about 5 years because she went to University of New Hampshire for her PhD. So, okay. Yeah. So we kind of come back every year to visit friends. Small world.
Yes. Well, actually, when I was hosting the highlight reel, one of the guests was Brett Squires, who we discovered grew up two streets over from my house where I live now, where I was recording. So we're like, oh my gosh, another one we could do in person.
Yeah, that's great. Oh, and doesn't he go to UNH?
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he goes to UNH. Yeah, yeah. My wife went there. I mean, we live in New Hampshire, so, you know, a lot of connections there.
Awesome. Everyone, you're welcome for hearing that. I'm sure you're edified by knowing where I am as I record this.
Yeah, you know, and I could take it out, but I think we're going to leave it, you know?
Leave it in.
Leave it in? Yeah. All right. That's what I'm thinking. But we do have a good show for you today. Going to get into a lot of football talk, some interesting news that transpired this week, and then we're playing a game, which I'm really looking forward to. But Matt, unfortunately, Hunter Henry, the young tight end in the Chargers offense that people were expecting to break out, Antonio Gates is gone from the picture, tears his ACL. We're not even into June. It's really disappointing. How, you know, deflating is this for Hunter Henry owners out there? Like, what were you expecting him from or expecting from him in 2018?
Yeah, well, this was going to be, I think, a pretty strong season for him. And one thing that's kind of horrible is that, like, so our show last week, we recorded, we got off the show, and then immediately I looked at RotoWorld and saw that Hunter Henry tore his ACL and was like, oh, great. Like, you know, that's something that's going to, like, I feel like, you know, it's too bad we didn't get to talk about it last week, but
I know
he was primed for a massive breakout because he was one of the most efficient players last year, just in terms of, at his position, in terms of the metrics that you look at. And normally it takes tight ends a couple of years really to integrate into the offense to become, you know, sort of like the two-way players where they can be competent enough as blockers. You know, they can become good enough as route runners to match up against linebackers or safeties. So this was going to be the year. He was going to be, you know, like, I think one of the primary options, like, I was anticipating that he might even take usage away from Keenan Allen, you know, that he would really be a guy, especially in the red zone. But yeah, now, I mean, not good for him. I do, though, think that this could be good for Mike Williams, someone we talked about last week.
Right.
You know, I think they might conceivably use him as something of a, you know, kind of smaller move tight end, because that's basically what Hunter Henry is, just a move tight end who has tight end legit size.
Yeah, and just to give some perspective to him, what's vacating with Henry gone? Last season, he had 62 targets, 12 red zone targets, turned that into 3 red zone touchdowns. Air yards were at 576. So, you know, in some respects, it's not like he's vacating this huge portion of work just on his last year stats alone. But Antonio Gates is gone now, so we were expecting an uptick there. And then, like you said, there's a lot of reason they'd incorporate him more into that offense. But they will be replacing him, maybe not a one-to-one replacement with Virgil Green, who's a really athletic player. We're talking a 90th percentile type of athlete going to turn 30, I believe, in the season. He hasn't really had his breakout or his true season playing in an offense like this. Solid team, Phillip Rivers as the passer. Do you think he can finally break through and become that week-to-week reliable fantasy option?
Man, no. I'm just going to say no. I mean, so it's possible, like, he could become like Barnage, you know, from a few seasons ago, where a guy's like old and somehow he breaks out, or like Zach Miller with the Bears a few years ago. Like, it does happen sometimes with these older tight ends who just like linger around the league, and then they get into their 30s and then they have a breakout season out of nowhere. So it could happen with Green. As you mentioned, he does have the athletic profile. And with the guys who are older and break out, they do tend to have that athletic profile. So it is possible. He was a very competent college player. But there's been hype around him for, you know, like 4 preseasons now. You know, like for multiple seasons with the Broncos, it was like in the preseason, he's going to be the guy. He's going to have significant usage this year, and then nothing. So I know he's in a system where they historically have relied on the tight end. I just don't know if he's going to be the guy.
Yeah, I know. I would like to get excited about it. You know, he's a player you look at. He has some of the best burst metrics you're ever going to see. You know, he really jumps off the page in the athletic regard. But I still have to imagine, you know, we haven't seen it coalesce yet. I think the team has, like you said, Mike Williams. You know, they have some other options that they can go to. So I'm expecting, from a fantasy perspective, he is going to be like most tight ends. You know, it's going to be a touchdown specific outcome for him. So he'll have a couple of weeks where he'll be usable. Maybe he slides into a DFS lineup, but I don't think that we can view him now as an entrenched fantasy starter.
Yeah, I think it's the type of thing where it's like, okay, we can pencil Virgil Green in for the best season of his career, and that means nothing. Like, that's still like very minimal usage. Like, the best season of his career is 237 yards and 1 touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, that's not the type of thing that speaks to a lot of future production. Yeah. So, as you look at the rest of this roster now, though, you had said that you think Mike Williams will see the biggest uptick in potential usage. Is there anybody else ancillary options? Do you think maybe they go a little bit more to the running backs now? Maybe that opens up a path for Eckler to get involved a little bit? Anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, not really. I think it just means that Keenan Allen continues to get fed targets. And then, you know, maybe Eckler, maybe Gordon, Tyrell Williams, instead of losing targets mm-hmm. to Mike Williams, he's able to keep his target floor that he had. Maybe same thing with Travis Benjamin. So, who really knows if they use Mike Williams in a move tight end-esque type of way? But I think he's like a natural fit for that. I think he would be good. They have this player. They spent such a high pick on him last year. They need to figure out some way to use him, preferably without diminishing what it is that they do on offense with the other players. So like if there's some sort of silver lining to this injury, it might be that this is the opportunity they need to develop Mike Williams. But I mean, who knows if they're actually going to do it in that way.
Yeah, well, definitely a lot of uncertainty there now in that passing game. I don't think, though, that this really impacts Phillip Rivers too heavily, if anybody out there was concerned about that. But this is something I'm sure we'll get back to in more depth as we progress through the summer. Before we move on, I did want to take a couple minutes to mention, as I talked about maybe one or two shows ago, that I'm participating in what they're calling celebrity eliminators for fantasycares.net, where you're playing in these leagues, 17 teams. It's a best ball league, but the team with the lowest points gets knocked out each week. All of the proceeds go to Toys for Tots. It's a really awesome thing. So please sign up, play against me. We're going to have a chat going, and it will just be a lot of fun. So go to fantasycares.net. Play against me, sign up for as many things as you can. It's a lot of fun, really good cause. And my other reminder, as always, is you can get a listeners only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of our premium NFL content, and it supports the pod. And you can support the pod in another way by subscribing to and rating RotoViz Radio channel on iTunes. Do that and you'll be eligible to win a free $35 entry to a league at the FFPC. Go to iTunes, leave a review with your name in it, and then listen to future episodes to hear if you're the winner. And also, if you're interested in being in an FFPC league with some of the RotoViz writers and podcasters, email us at rotovizradio@gmail.com and we'll get that set up. One other thing I want to add, I want to try something new on this show, which is to hear from the listeners, get you guys and gals out there more involved. So if you have any questions, maybe a comment you'd like to share and have it played on the air, call into the show's number, which is 978-925-7628, and leave us a voicemail, include your name, where you're from, and then your question. And in a couple of weeks, I want to do a pod where we focus on bold predictions for the 2018 season. So we want to hear yours. Call in, leave your bold prediction. Matt and I will consider the odds of it coming to fruition and break it down. So again, the number is 978-925-7628, and leave us a voicemail. Other interesting news that occurred this week. Well, in my perspective, it isn't really that exciting. We'll see what you think. But 34-year-old Brandon Marshall signs with the Seahawks. Jimmy Graham, last season, over 25 red zone targets, 10 touchdowns in the red zone. Maybe Marshall comes in and fills this void. What's your read on this? Is this worth getting excited about?
No, I don't think so. But I'm a little jaded when it comes to Brandon Marshall anyway. Last year I was in a dynasty league. So still in the dynasty league with, Jonathan Bales. And, he was very insistent. He wasn't really very insistent, but, for the sake of the story, he was very insistent that we take Brandon Marshall, because he was just, you know, one season removed from, a good year. He thought we might have the opportunity to buy him low, and we really did buy him low. So, he's 34 at this point, or will be 34 during the season. He's now, I think this is his fourth team in 5 years. You know, I think he's kind of on the wrong side of the Dez Bryant career trajectory. Mm. You know what I mean? So yep. he does have the possibility as like a big bodied guy of potentially filling that red zone role. I just don't know if he's at this point agile enough or quick enough. And then if he's not, then is he big enough really to fill that role? And I don't know if he is. Like, there's a difference between Jimmy Graham being slow, but still being big enough and right. kind of like dominant enough in the way that he uses his body to like quote unquote box out defenders, you know, because he's like 270 pounds. There's a difference between Jimmy Graham doing that and Brandon Marshall doing that at 225 pounds.
Absolutely. And the other thing that you have to consider with a player like Marshall is if you look at 2013 on to 2015, when he was still very solid, he was averaging nearly just 13 targets to every touchdown. I can't imagine he can keep up a pace like that. And I don't think you're going to see him accruing a whole lot of yardage in that Seattle scheme. So it's really going to come down to those touchdowns, which I can't imagine he really is able to do what Graham did. And the other thing is, too, if you look at Graham, it took him a little bit to get going in that offense. So it's not like it's necessarily going to be a plug and play. So when you put this all together, to me, I'm not super hyped up about Marshall arriving there. I guess if you wanted to make the case for him, you could say, well, you know, they have Ed Dixon now at tight end. You know, he's not going to see a workload like Graham would. If you look at the rest of the receivers, maybe Marshall can do things that, you know, your Tyler Lockett's aren't going to be able to do. But I'm still not too hyped up about this.
Yeah. If I were to have to predict an older tight end who finally gets his shot to break out, I would go with Dixon over Virgil Green. You know, I think it's not as if I think he's actually going to be a tight end one. But I could see him being a guy who gets more action, within the offense and fills more of the Jimmy Graham role, in comparison to Brandon Marshall. Like, gotcha. I don't think Brandon Marshall is even going to be, a key part of that offense by the middle of the season.
Yeah. I don't think he really needs to be either. Especially if Rashad Penny works out, they have somewhat of a ground game there. Maybe they can use a guy like JD McKissic or even hopefully CJ Procise, get him involved in some way. And then naturally they have Doug Baldwin, who I am still a huge fan of. I think they have a couple other talented young receivers like Tyler Lockett that I mentioned. So it's not like they have a void that needs to be filled by Marshall. So I don't think he's really going to be a priority. Yeah. But I do want to ask you, you mentioned talking about liking Ed Dixon as the old breakout this year. I was in a dynasty league where I kind of needed to rent a tight end for this season. I opted to go with Ed Dixon over George Kittle. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Kittle much younger. And I'm still not sure I made the right decision. What do you think of that? Like, do you think that Kittle is that it was that how bad of a decision was that?
I don't know if it was a bad decision. Because in part, the 49ers depth chart is so unsettled. Like it's easy to imagine that they want Kittle potentially to be the guy, but you could see how Celek ends up getting a lot of action. And then, you know, Pierre Garçon is returning. They have Goodwin, you know, they just drafted a wide receiver. Like it's easy to see them not really using the tight end position all that much. And then if they do, that the workload would be split between Celek and Kittle. So, I don't know. I think it's probably pretty even in dynasty. I would maybe go with Kittle just because he's younger. So I feel as if I would have, you know, maybe more upside with him and also maybe just like a little more of an idea of what he might be capable of doing. But I think it's probably about even.
Yeah, well, I guess the key thing that I should mention, too, is I really believe that my team has the best shot of winning the championship this year. So it was kind of like getting the tight end for this year, which it sounds like you think that there is a decent outlook for him. Not to make this a show about my dynasty teams, because I know that's frustrating to listen to, but it is topical, I think, because we were talking about the Seahawks team trying to gauge what the passing attack might look like now.
Yeah.
So Speaking of Dynasty, I want to tell you about our friends at the Fantasy Football Players Championship, the home of season-long high-stakes fantasy football. The fantasy draft season is heating up, and the FFPC has a format to suit your interest and budget. Whether you like best ball or super flex or classic managed leagues, there are drafts daily with entry fees starting at just $35. Jump into a slow or a live draft today. If you like Dynasty, the FFPC has almost 200 active Dynasty leagues with entry fees starting at $77 and going up to $2,500. And the incredible thing is not a single Dynasty league has folded in 8 years. New Dynasty leagues are forming right now with startup drafts launching on a regular basis. Don't miss the FFPC experience. Go to myffpc.com and register now. That's myffpc.com, the home of season-long high-stakes fantasy football. That's right. It's buy, sell, hold time. For the first time in the show history, we're going to be rolling out some games, and the first one that we're going to be playing is buy, sell, hold, and I'm excited that I got to use this drop. So, Matt, I think it's a pretty obvious concept, but buy, sell, hold. I'm going to name you some players I want your opinion on if you think at their current ADP, which is taken from MFL 10 leagues, leagues where players are actively drafting with money on the line, if you think that player at that price is a guy that you'd want to go after, you'd want to buy him, you think it's a hold, he's priced right, or a sell, it is a point in the draft where you would say no. Make sense?
Yeah, by the way, that was fantastic music. I hope we can hear that music again at some point. Maybe not this episode, but some point in a future episode.
Okay. I'll tell you something. I was busy this morning getting a lot of music, and I have one in particular that I cannot wait to roll out for you. Uh-oh. So at some point, I'm going to hit you with it.
Okay.
Okay. All right. But Julio Jones is going at pick 13. I want to know what you think about this. Me personally, I think that's a little rich for me right now. I mean, Julio is one of the better, well, one of the top three, I would probably say real, or top four. Wow. I'm having trouble. I'm going back and forth on myself a lot tonight.
Yeah.
This is weird. I feel like tonight I am the optimist and you have been the negative one.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm optimistic on Julio. I know there are people who don't like him. For a variety of reasons. And so I get it. Part of it is the distribution of his production.
That's exactly what I was going to get to.
He's very boom or bust. And so, especially if you are in a redraft league, where you have to decide on who to play, then it's much harder. In best ball, though, which is what we're talking about, mm-hmm. I think he's totally fine. So if he's around the ADP 13, I think that's a little bit low for him, like close to the right range, but I think a little bit low. We're talking about a guy who is a top 10 wide receiver, fantasy receiver, basically since he entered the league, for sure from 2012 on. And, from 2013 to last season, so a 5-year span, he has over 100 yards per game. Like, that is just an unreal level of production.
Okay. And, yeah, that is,
and so especially in the best ball format, where it is totally fine for you to have a boom or bust distribution, and in fact, that actually might be desirable, mm-hmm. I think it's good.
Okay. I mean, I guess I can get on board with that. It really would depend on the direction you're going, but I think for this exercise, we're just focusing on the price. So that would mean, are you holding, though, or are you buying? I forget what you said.
I would be buying him at 13.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, if he's there, I think he should be going anywhere from like 9 to 11, kind of like in that range. So if he's there at 13, I'm definitely good with him.
Yeah. And, as I'm looking at it to try to talk myself more into this, the weird thing, though, last year he wasn't as efficient as before, but I look at those red zone targets, 20 red zone targets last year, only turned them into one red zone touchdown. In 2015, 22, he turned it into 5. So he was more efficient that year than most. But I mean, still, he's averaging 15 red zone targets in the last 5 years to 2 red zone touchdowns. It's so peculiar.
Yeah. I think we're going to see some major touchdown progression there. I mean, I think he's one of the only guys in the league who legitimately has, like, in addition to like Antonio Brown, who legitimately mm-hmm. has like 1,600 yards, 16 touchdown potential. And I know, like, you say that about a guy who has scored, I don't know how many touchdowns in the last 3 years. You know, probably not even 17 touchdowns in the last 3 years. Like, yeah. I think he has the potential to come close to that in 1 year. And a lot of it is just because touchdown production is so fluky, but he gets such great target, you know, like target accumulation. And he's pretty efficient in terms of just turning his targets into yards.
Yeah. The other thing to note too, is we speak about potential for progression last year. Now, not that this is always sticky for a player, but their targets per touchdown for him, it was at 46 last season. It's normally somewhere closer to 30. So there definitely should be a bounce back. He had 2,105 air yards last season, which was the most he's had, going back 5 years. So, yeah, I think I do expect a better outcome from Julio going into this season, probably Matt Ryan as well. But I think for me, it would be more of a hold. But I'm probably too focused on redraft. That's where I spend most of my time. I don't do as much best ball. So to your point, I think for him, it's probably okay, because that end of the season point accumulation will be pretty high. In the last 3 years, he goes for 13 games with 10 plus points. You look at 15 plus 10 times a season, that's still pretty darn good. 20 plus 7 times, 25 plus 4 times, top 12, 7 games on average out of a 16-game season. So maybe I'm being too influenced by how the points have been accrued the last season or two, but I'm going to stick with my guns and say that Julio is a hold for me. So, who is up next? Let me pop over here. Oh, another receiver, a player that I really like, Adam Thielen at pick 30.
I think that might be a smidgen high, but I don't have much wrong with that. So I'd say that's around a hold for me. Maybe even a little bit of a sell, but I'm not going to like quibble too much with it. So there are a couple things that go into this. So one, like Julio Jones, I think he has the potential for some touchdown progression next year. If he sees a similar number of targets, but there's also the potential that next year the offense doesn't do as well. So new quarterback coming in, we should assume that Kirk Cousins can be better than what they had last year. But at the same time, there's no guarantee. And sometimes quarterbacks do struggle in their first year, you know, in a new offense, new players, you know, new city, just things like that. And then also, it's a new coordinator there. So I don't
know.
Exactly. You know, so there's a little uncertainty in that situation, which makes me at pick 30, you know, like he's going to be, you know, he's going to be like the third guy on your team. I don't know. There's just maybe a little too much uncertainty there for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it's maybe a hold. It's definitely not a must buy, because I do think that though I like Thielen and I like his skill set, I think he's talented. I kind of think that Diggs is the better overall receiver. When you look at this team and you look at them playing together, when Diggs is at full health, he's been the guy that they go to. So Thielen actually at this point in time is getting drafted at 30. Diggs is at 35, but I would not be shocked in any way if you see things skew and Diggs becomes the clear number one. I'm not saying that it's going to happen, but I think it's more likely that he becomes the clear number one and can outpace in air yards, targets, quality looks Thielen, whereas I don't see a scenario where Thielen, barring a Diggs injury, really runs away with the workload. The other thing, too, we got to consider, too, Dalvin Cook returning. You know, you don't know with the new coordinator how things are going to shake out. So when I put this all together and with my preference for Diggs, it's more of a hold, especially if I can get Diggs in that same spot. Because for me, Diggs is the player I would take before Thielen.
Yeah, I definitely... I agree with you there. For me, they are basically neck and neck, and I think it's pretty hard to predict which one will actually end up being better. So if you are, I think, bullish on that offense and you want a piece of it, I think you just kind of take the one who falls to you out of those two guys.
Yeah, I mean, right. I prefer Diggs, but like you said, you know, it's not like we can really at this point especially accurately predict who is going to be the major player. And there is certainly many scenarios in which they're more or less analogous. And the final thing that you touched upon with Kirk Cousins coming in, Yes, Kirk Cousins, really good quarterback, has been solid from a fantasy standpoint. I think in this free agency period, he was likely the best quarterback, but that does not mean that he can step right in and this offense is going to be functioning at the levels it was last year towards the end of the season in week one, week two, week three. So that's one thing I think we need to keep in mind as we are drafting these players in the coming season. But a player that is at the tight end position, Zach Ertz, he's only a couple picks later. He's at 39. I guess, how do you feel not only about Ertz, but taking a tight end of his caliber at this point in the draft? To me, seems a little bit early to be going for Ertz.
Yeah, so in a vacuum, I like Ertz. And I think at this position, it's maybe not too high. Kind of like in, again, in the vacuum, but I think if you start taking kind of like positional scarcity, and just like roster construction into account, my general preference would be to wait on the tight end position, especially again in the best ball format, to wait on the tight end position. If it's a regular redraft league and you have to lock a guy in, then I'm much more willing to spring for a tight end earlier, just because I want to know I have that position locked in with a player I actually trust.
Right. And last season, Ertz put up 198 PPR points, best season of his career. This is one of those things, too, where you have to look at, like you mentioned, obviously there's the factor of positional scarcity, but there are probably some options of players that are going to substantially outscore him at that point. And, you know, maybe the difference in their production versus what you'd be getting if you waited on that position is more than the difference between Ertz and, you know, an average tight end. So for me, I think I would sell at that standpoint, based upon a lot of factors. In a vacuum, yeah, I mean, I think for me, Ertz is probably the third or fourth best tight end going into this season, but it's really more of a positional thing for me there.
Sorry, one more thing about Ertz that is intriguing. So, I mean, people obviously know that he is a great tight end, but really over the last two seasons, whenever Jordan Matthews hasn't been there, and obviously Jordan Matthews wasn't there last year, but there were some games in which Ertz was out. So if you take the last 2 years in which he's been there with Doug Peterson, Jordan Matthews hasn't been there, so Zach Ertz has been functioning as that kind of big-bodied slot-esque receiver. In those 16 games, not counting the postseason, in the 16 games without Jordan Matthews, he has 16.6 PPR points. That is just absolutely outrageous production. 0.69 touchdowns per game, 65 yards per game, almost 9 targets per game, 6 receptions per game. Just fantastic production. So there is a lot to be enthusiastic about with Zach Ertz.
Oh my gosh, I just realized this too. Last season, he played 13 games. He finished in the top 12, 11 of those 13 games. That, I think, might have been the best. You know what? Just to put this in perspective, let me pull up Travis Kelce pretty quickly here and see what he did. So Kelce went on 15 games, finished in the top 12 just 11 times. Wow, that's impressive. Oof, Matt, you might be talking me into Zach Ertz. I still think at that point, though, it's a little too rich for me.
Yeah, it's a little pricey. I mean, if I want like a high-end elite guy, I'm pretty much going to go like Gronk or Kelce. but yeah, Zach Ertz at 39, I think that is value if you are in the market for a tight end in that range.
Okay, that is fair. Now, a player who is being drafted at 59, and I really don't like this, is Carlos Hyde. With you being the optimist for us sometimes, anything here that you can make an argument for?
No, hard pass. I mean, like, it's possible that he might return value, but I think you are drafting him near the top of his range of outcomes. You know, this is a team, one, that has a pretty good established receiving back in Duke Johnson, and then two, just spent a very high second rounder, almost a first rounder, on Nick Chubb. You know, it wouldn't be surprising to see Chubb in the second half of the season really be the first and second down guy. And then also, this is a team, although I think they are improving, this is a team that once again could struggle, so they could be in negative game script for a lot of the season, which would mean that conceivably Carlos Hyde would be off the field, Duke Johnson would be on the field. So no, I'm at this ADP absolutely staying away from Carlos Hyde.
Yeah, and sometimes you'll take the approach, I'm going to go with the cheapest running back on a particular team. But to me, this is one where there's a couple distinguishing factors with the other player. Like you mentioned, Chubb, the draft capital, Duke Johnson, obviously he's going to remain involved in the passing game. And then if you consider the other weapons that this team now has, they have Jarvis Landry, who out of the slot, they can basically use like another running back, have Josh Gordon, Corey Coleman, David Njoku. There's a lot of players in this offense. So to me, the chances of Carlos Hyde being one of the guys that really hits from this offense are very low. And there's a lot of other solid players out there with potential to have the, you know, have control of their offense. So for Hyde, when you look at the probabilities versus the cost, it's a definite sell. Rex Burkhead is currently going at 88. Kind of a similar situation here to Hyde. I think for me, that is a definite sell as well. I don't know what are these people thinking?
So yeah, Burkhead is interesting. I don't know. So I'm of two minds on this. So actually here's a question.
Sure.
Are you a Patriots fan?
Yes, I am. I am.
Do you think that colors in any way, potentially the way you look at Burkhead?
I definitely do. But okay. I think for me, it would make me more inclined to like Burkhead because I wanted him last season to be used as much as possible. I kind of wanted him to become one of the focal points of the offense. But having been a Patriots fan, following this team so closely season in and season out, I may be overcorrect to the point that I just stay away from Patriot running backs altogether. So for me, like no matter what, I'm basically staying away from them. So yes, it certainly colors my impressions of Rex Burkhead, but in kind of a, I guess, a way that competes with itself, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. So here are my perspectives on Burkhead. He is a pretty versatile back. He can catch the ball, and I think he can be a first and second down guy if they want him to be. Now, granted, he is in a system where they just tend to spread the ball to different running backs, and it's very hard to determine in any given game what they're going to do. But I think that means that maybe, 4 to 8 games in this upcoming season, Burkhead will have a viable game,
mm-hmm.
Where he gets 50 to 70 yards and maybe a touchdown, maybe 3 receptions. So I think he has a chance of actually being someone who returns value at the 88th pick. Like if I had to look at the running backs on this team right now and predict which one at the end of the season will have the most fantasy points, it actually might be Rex Burkhead, but I don't know if it will be sufficiently higher than any of the other running backs on the team.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I think he's the guy. I think he will end up being the guy who has the most production.
I think that I actually expect it's all going to be very close, but I actually think that Michelle might be the guy that finishes with the most points. But the thing that we have to focus on here is he's going at 88th. It's a 12-team league in MFL 10. Yes, he could have, I think 6 would be the real high reach of how many, really usable MFL 10 type of weeks you're going to get. I would rather use that pick on a player that I feel has the potential to every single week be the guy. Not that that's going to happen, but at the end of the season, I'm hoping to get a lot more production out of that 7th round pick than I can expect to get with Burkhead. So for me, it is definitely a sell, but for you, it seems like it could be a hold. I don't know if you actually gave us your final answer there.
I think I would buy.
Oh my God, a buy?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just sort of depends on if you're looking for a running back at that position, or maybe you have more of a need at wide receiver. But I think if you're looking for a running back, that puts him at kind of like the low end of the running back 3, high end running back 4 range.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think he could get that. I mean, like, I'm very not optimistic about Sony Michel this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Gillislee, he potentially could be cut. Brandon Bolden is basically just a special team.
Right.
Like, I could see Burkhead being a guy who actually gets some run this year.
All right. Well,
I think the touchdown, I think it's the versatility. Okay. Thing. So one, I think he's going to be able to, I think out of all those running backs, he's the one most likely to get the most touchdowns. And then he also has ability as a receiver. So like for me, you put those two things together, I think he will cobble together enough fantasy usable games over the course of the season.
Let me ask you this. What would you say is Burkhead's ceiling on the season? Like, what's his best case outcome?
I think his best case outcome is actually something like good Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, where like he actually becomes the guy, like Sony Michel. So let's say that like someone, either Michelle or White, like gets injured or something like that. Yep. Right. And then the other guy just doesn't really prove himself as someone who's more than a change of pace back. Then I think at that point you have Burkhead, who's clearly the first and second down guy. And this is an offense that, produces a lot of points. So you have a guy who has a chance of getting touchdowns. And then Burkhead is a competent receiver. So like I could see a guy who has like 1200 yards and 10 touchdowns, like as an upside thing. Like I think that's more than possible.
Wow. I mean, I can certainly understand that narrative. I think that it is definitely possible, but I would put that scenario at under 3% odd, or, you know, less than a 3% chance of actually playing out. So I'm going to have to disagree with you on this one. And I would say this is one that I actually would very confidently take any bet. Not that I'm looking for one here, but I would take any bet that involved Burkhead justifying that seventh round pick.
Okay, well, how about this?
Okay.
Do you want to take heads up? Do you want to take Michelle versus Burkhead? Most fantasy points at the end of the season, PPR?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, yeah. We'll figure out the
odds. Figure it out.
Not the odds. We'll figure out the stakes.
And you know what? I like this because I was so upset about the draft pick used on Michelle that I innately was just going to not like him, but now it's going to make me want to root for him. So this is a good thing.
Hey, sports fans. Football season's here, and it's time to get in on the action with MyBookie. MyBookie is the industry-leading sports betting website that offers real Vegas odds on football, baseball, and all your favorite sporting events. You can take a side, the total, or even fantasy points props. MyBookie lets you bet online and win big. Did the game already kick off? Don't sweat it. MyBookie has in-game live betting on every major league and event, even esports. There's no better time to join MyBookie than today. Go to MyBookie to open an account and start winning. Use promo code CHAMPION when you register for your account and get a 100% sign-up bonus up to $1,000 on your first deposit. Bet today. Visit MyBookie's website or call 844-866-2387. That's 844-866-2387. Check them out today and use promo code CHAMPION for a 100% bonus. Terms and conditions apply. For entertainment purposes only. Void where prohibited. Hey, sports fans, football season's here, and it's time to get in on the action with MyBookie. MyBookie is the industry-leading sports betting website that offers real Vegas odds on football, baseball, and all your favorite sporting events. You can take a side, the total, or even fantasy points props. MyBookie lets you bet online and win big. Did the game already kick off? Don't sweat it. MyBookie has in-game live betting on every major league and event, even esports. There's no better time to join MyBookie than today. Go to MyBookie to open an account and start winning. Use promo code CHAMPION when you register for your account and get a 100% sign-up bonus up to $1,000 on your first deposit. Bet today. Visit MyBookie's website or call 844-866-2387. That's 844-866-2387. Check them out today and use promo code CHAMPION for a 100% bonus. Terms and conditions apply. For entertainment purposes only. Void where prohibited.
Unrelated, but today it randomly just occurred to me. I have this set of these little like 32 mini NFL helmets, and my daughter was playing with them. She's 1.5, so she just likes to pick them up and take them out of the package. And she picked up the Steelers helmet, and I was just giving her things to learn, just kind of filling the space. And I mentioned how the Steelers were one of the few teams that were up there with Patriots and Super Bowl wins. And then it made me realize how upset I still am about the benching of Malcolm Butler in the Super Bowl and how cheated I feel of having that sixth Super Bowl ring.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you got to trust the process.
Oh, my gosh.
You got to trust Bill.
Oh, my gosh. And that's the same thing that happened with the Sony Michel pick. When I was complaining about it, everybody up here was like, well, it's Belichick, so it has to be a good pick. It can't be a bad yeah. pick. And I was just like, well, Darius Kice is better. We shouldn't be using a running back there. I'm really getting off the wheels here, but I'm still upset about that, and I'm sure people can relate.
Oh, that's interesting. So I think there's a pretty big difference between questioning decision makers about draft picks versus questioning decision makers about personnel decisions that they make during a game.
Yeah.
Or before a game starts, because there's just so much, like, they have so much more information on these guys than we do in comparison to the draft, where, like, it's not as if, like, we have equal information, but, like, the degree to which they have much more information than we do when it comes to evaluating players, I think, is reduced.
Right.
So I feel it's easier to be like, oh, that was a crappy pick, versus like, oh, wow, he really shouldn't have played this player in this situation.
Yeah, I definitely can understand that. And I do think that just kind of speaks to, sometimes when we're watching sports or you hear people comment on things, there's a lot of assumptions going into their assessment. And lots of times we don't really know what a team is trying to achieve in a certain situation. There might be external factors or things that are going on in that game that, like you said, they know about, and that, you know, we might not even have the understanding about, or are able to accurately digest and diagnose what was going on. But in the draft pick case, I do think this is, like you said, it's something where we have a much closer level of understanding or data on that player. And in the case of a player, like, the oddest thing for me was, this is a team that has shown you can take a lot of different types of running backs. They can have various skill sets, various talent. The Patriots make them work. It's not like they needed that one running back to really make the focal point. So it was just a very odd use of that pick. But anyway, I digress, unless you have any more thoughts on that.
No, I mean, totally agree. I don't see the point in drafting Sony Michel when you have James White signed to a, you know, pretty team-friendly, longer-term type of contract.
Yeah. Well, former Patriot here, which was another head-scratcher for a lot of people in New England, but I wasn't as opposed to it as other people, wasn't ideal. But Jimmy Garoppolo in San Francisco now, he's going at 106. That's, in terms of quarterbacks being taken in these, that's a pretty aggressive valuation for Jimmy. Thoughts?
Okay, so two things. One, and this is just showing my ignorance. When I saw Jimmy G on the outline, I actually thought this was Jimmy Graham.
all right, this might be a regional thing because around here, like, he's only called Jimmy G. Like, yeah, that's it.
That totally makes sense. And so I was even thinking, like, Jimmy Graham at 106, like, that seems really off. Like, I was just, like, looking at the data, and I'm like, that's not really what I'm seeing here. Jimmy Garoppolo at 106 makes much more sense. I think that's a hold for me. I think he has the upside of being a top three fantasy producer this year. Mm-hmm. I think he also has the downside of being, like, you know, like, number 15 at the position, like, something like that, you know, maybe like number 17. You know, I think he's being drafted right now around, like, QB 13 to 15. So I think he's being drafted closer to the bottom of, like, his range of outcomes. So I think it's fine. I think there's a lot of upside with him there. It's just a question of whether you're the type who likes to go with quarterbacks there, or maybe you want to wait a little bit longer.
Right. Yeah. So at least as of now, when I pull up the ADP for MFL 10s, it is pick, he's going as the ninth quarterback off the board. So he's going before guys like Stafford, Roethlisberger, Rivers, Mahomes, as well. So I guess it's easy to make the case for him there. We did get a pretty solid, granted it was short, sample of what he was able to do. There's things to like about that offense. Definitely has more upside than a guy like Stafford or Roethlisberger, in that you can say we've seen enough of them never finishing as, like, a top three. That might not be totally true, but at least in recent years. So I can see how you can make the case for him there. With my drafting style, especially in a best ball league, I don't see myself going with Garoppolo there, but I do think that's a fair price. It's not too much of a reach. So I'm okay with that. But I'm curious. Let's say you did see Jimmy Graham at the 106. What would your thoughts have been?
Clear by.
Yes.
You know, yeah, clear by. So, yeah, we don't need to dissect that anymore. I was okay. Like, Jimmy Graham was like, yeah, that's an easy, clear value there. Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah, that's one of those you almost don't know if I'm putting it in just to make a point of how obvious of, like, the easy decision it is, or if it's just, you know, because I'm maybe not on board with that. So.
Yeah, no, I was just clearly looking at the wrong data. I was just kind of combing through it and like, man, I am really not seeing him in this draft range.
Oh, my gosh. That's awesome. So. Final player that I want to talk about tonight, Kelvin Benjamin. He's at the 116. Only, I don't know if it's fair to say he's the only receiver in Buffalo. Maybe it kind of is. You can definitely make a case for a lot of targets coming his way. Of course, they're from Josh Allen, so who knows if they'll even be within 10 feet of him. Any reason to like Benjamin here?
No, I mean, so the bullish case for him is that, as you said, he basically is the only target there. Who knows how much they can depend on from Zay Jones or Jeremy Curley or whoever else is even on the roster right now. So like Kelvin Benjamin is the guy, but, you know, LeSean McCoy will get his targets. Charles Clay will get his targets. And then this offense might not even be efficient enough to give Benjamin a decent shot at getting a lot of red zone targets.
Right.
So if he's not getting the red zone targets and he's not very efficient with the targets he does get, like he's not very good at turning targets into extra yards because he's basically a slug at this point. You know, like he was never exceptionally athletic to begin with. And then now, sorry.
No worries.
And then now he has the knee issues. No, I mean, I don't want him at all at 116. I think he should be closer to like 150.
Well, let's keep in mind, he does produce 3.2 yards after the reception. So, you know, maybe, yeah, no, I mean, there's just no real case that I can make for him. I don't think we even need to explain it anymore. Just to put things in perspective, that 3.2 yards per reception ranked 160 last year. Air yards per target haven't been that great. And yeah, I mean, there's not anything I can give you unless he were to clearly be expecting a good like 30, maybe even more red zone targets, which there's no chance of that happening. So for me, this is a major, major sell.
Yeah, totally agree.
So we have a couple of minutes. This might not be the most topical game ever, Matt, but I want to roll it out. What do you think?
No. which game?
No,
which game?
No. It's not on the sheet. This is a bonus game that I did not have.
Okay.
I'm just going to queue it up here and we'll see what you think.
Okay.
Right then. Right. Okay. Gryffindor!
You probably have no idea where this is going.
I mean, I know where that's from, but I don't know where it's going.
All right. I believe that I've heard that you are a big Harry Potter fan.
Yes.
All right. I am as well. One of my favorite things to do is talk about real life people that I know and what house they would get sorted into. If you're up for it, I'm going to list some NFL players and coaches, and you can real quickly just tell us what house what house you see them falling into.
Okay, this is good. This is an excellent segment.
I thought so, especially for the end of it. Yes. Oh, I got some more of these too, because it's actually come to my attention that we share a lot of things like misanthropy. I believe you like Seinfeld.
Yes.
Okay, good.
And misanthropy and Seinfeld go together very well.
Yes, they do. But topic at hand, the Harry Potter sorting hat. For those of you that don't know, there's four houses. There's Gryffindor, Slytherin, Hufflepuff, and Ravenclaw. What house do you fall into?
I mean, I don't want to presume, but I think I'm a Gryffindor.
Oh, doesn't everybody?
I think a lot of people do. Although, so my wife is a university professor.
Oh,
and
Ravenclaw.
A lot of the students that she teaches think that they would fall into Hufflepuff.
Interesting.
It's like they say Hufflepuff. Not many people claim Hufflepuff, I don't think. But,
right.
You know, some of them do. I don't know. Maybe it's a result of like the location where we live, or I mean, I'm not sure.
Well, I feel like Hufflepuff is when there's not really any like distinguishing characteristics, that's where they fall. An intellectual kind of automatically gets put into Ravenclaw. But, you know, Bill Belichick, I think this is an obvious one. Where is he?
I think he's Slytherin.
Absolutely. Is there even any question?
Yeah. Perfect Slytherin.
Yes. He is like the poster child for Slytherin. I can just picture him with the black and green robes on, off in potions class, just, you know, conjuring up some really messy stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So I think if you are like an intellectual, but you have like a slight, it's not mischievous bent, but like a slightly dark side, mm-hmm. then you go into Slytherin. But if you're intellectual, and you have sort of like, I don't know, like an exploratory type of nature, you know, then maybe you go into Gryffindor, you know, cause maybe you're like more courageous or something. But if you're just sort of like the straight, like book academic intellectual, then you're maybe more of a Ravenclaw.
Right. Too. Cause Gryffindor, there's a little bit of a mischievous streak in them.
Yeah.
And Slytherin, there's definitely, you know, vindictiveness too, in addition to the darkness. So
yeah.
Juju Smith-Schuster.
I think he's Hufflepuff.
Oh, me too. Yep.
Yeah. Like I could see like Gryffindor, but I think he's more Hufflepuff just because he's like so laid back. Like no one dislikes him for any reason, you know, like he's a great guy. So yeah, like I think he strikes me as like very Hufflepuff.
Oh yeah. I definitely picture him, riding his bike back and forth between, potions and charms and divination in the Hufflepuff yellow. OBJ. Yes.
OBJ, man, I think he's a Slytherin.
That's what I was gonna say too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he's a Slytherin. He's cold. You know what I mean? Like he's like I feel like he's the type who would just like score touchdowns on people and then like, you know, like slice them.
Hey, yep.
You know.
Yep. Oh yeah, Sectum Semper. I can see it.
Yeah.
David Johnson.
David Johnson. I think he's a Gryffindor.
Yes. 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 That's what I was gonna say too.
Yeah. Yeah, he's, you know, kind of like coming from nowhere a little bit and then has this sort of like unexpected production. But like that magical raw power was there all along.
Oh, absolutely. He can do it all. I like that. Hard worker, does all the right things. Definitely a Gryffindor. The new broadcaster of Monday Night Football, Jason Witten.
Hmm. I don't think he's a Ravenclaw. I think I would go with, another Gryffindor.
Yeah, I thought that was the thing, but I do wonder, he's one of those guys, I wonder if there's more to him than meets the eye, and perhaps he's not really that golden Gryffindor. I don't know. But he's replacing John Gruden. Now, this one I'm really interested to see where you sort Gruden.
Gruden is not in the house. He's not. He's a squib.
Oh my god, he's a squib. Yes, maybe he's out tending the fields, working for Hagrid.
Yeah, I think actually, so if he's in a house, I think he's a Slytherin, but I think he's one of the dumb Slytherins.
Oh my gosh, yeah, he's like a crab or a goyle. I was gonna say, I think he ends up in Hufflepuff because he lacks he thinks he's an evil genius, but the Sorting Hat knows that he's really not as capable as he thinks, so it moves him over to Hufflepuff. Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing. I think if you think you are an evil genius, whether or not you actually are a genius, you have that, like that heightened potential for evil, and that puts you in Slytherin.
Interesting. Now, of course, we'd have to also consider the fact that it's going to take into account where he wants to go. And I think Gruden might not want to be perceived as a Slytherin, so maybe that would force him out.
Yeah, that might be true.
All right.
But like the Raiders, I mean, like, I feel like if there's like a Slytherin type
that's
of
true.
Franchise, the Raiders are kind of it.
Oh, yeah. I would say between the Raiders and Jim Irsay. So maybe you fold the Colts into that too. I don't know. There's a lot of unsavory characters in the NFL. Let's be honest. Yeah. But Rob Gronkowski.
Hufflepuff.
Like, yeah, definitely.
Because I feel like he's just more of like that party animal type. I mean, maybe Gryffindor. Just because, like, he's maybe someone who would have, like, hung out with James and been, like, super mischievous and gotten into trouble.
Yep.
But never been expelled just because, like, people like him.
Right. There's a boyish charm.
But I think he's more of a Hufflepuff.
Yeah. That's where I was going to go, too. So I like how in sync we were there. I actually think that might be my favorite segment that we've done so far, which definitely is just exposed the level of nerdiness that goes into this show.
Yeah, and also, it's probably the most useful segment we've ever done, which probably also doesn't speak well of the show, but definitely a fun segment, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Well, if people like it, we'll have, hopefully, some more games like that. We'll try not to do them every episode, but I can't wait to bring some Seinfeld conversation into the fold as well. Before we close... go ahead.
Yeah, one thing. I think... if people are interested in actually calling us, it would be good to get their thoughts on some of the players we mentioned, or to get our to ask us about other players, and we can give our Harry Potter house prediction on where these players would
go. Oh my gosh, I love it. Wow. The other thing we'll have to talk about too is Quidditch positions at some point.
Man.
Oh my god. No.
No. No.
Oh.
Maybe.
All right. Maybe. We'll think about it. Hey, as a reminder though, that number that you can call in, don't forget, we want to hear about your bold predictions for 2018. 978-925-7628. I'll put that in the show notes, so you can find that on the site as well. Oh, one thing I want to touch upon quickly. It was brought to my attention that we forgot to talk about, Goodwin last week.
Oh yeah.
Any thoughts on him?
Meh. I mean, he's someone who I think in a vacuum, based on the production he had, and then based on like the Bayesian prior of his draft position, his collegiate production, and his physical profile, like you would think that he is someone who could break out this year. But the question is like where is that production gonna come from? Like Mike Evans is still there, he's gonna get his targets. They have DeSean Jackson, who presumably is still a starter. They have two tight ends.
Right.
Right. And then they also have a competent slot receiver that they want to get the ball to. Where is Godwin going to get his production? I just kind of don't see it happening unless there's an injury.
Right. And you know, I think that just kind of like in my mind was so ingrained that's probably like the reason that I just completely glossed over even bringing him up. So I'm kind of with you there. I think that he's a player in the right situation. It could come to fruition, but I'm not seeing that this year in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, exactly. Same. Yeah.
Yep. Any other actual NFL thoughts now that we've talked about Portsmouth a lot, we've gone through Harry Potter in depth.
No.
Okay.
No NFL thoughts.
All right. Well, in that event, that's going to do it for today's episode. Once again, I'm Dave Cabin. You can follow me on Twitter at Dave Cabin FF. My co-host was Matthew Friedman, who you can follow at Matt F the Oracle. Don't forget to call in to 978-925-7628 and tell us your bold predictions. This has been RotoViz Radio. Please subscribe to the podcast, leave us a review, and be sure to tune in next week. Thank you for listening to RotoViz Radio. Please rate, review, and contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio and support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the listener homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Decoy Wines of Sonoma, California. As you gather with family and friends this summer, experience the best of wine country with Decoy by Duckhorn. Winemaker Tyson Wolf spends every vintage focused on harvesting grapes and crafting wines from the finest vineyards. Whether it's our flagship Cabernet or crisp and refreshing Rosé, Decoy has just the wine for your discerning taste. Ask for us at your local wine shop or visit decoywines.com/celebrate to locate our wines near you. Whether you're firing up the grill, hosting an alfresco get-together, or enjoying the warm summer nights, let Decoy by Duckhorn elevate your occasion. This episode is brought to you by Decoy Wines of Sonoma, California. As you gather with family and friends this summer, experience the best of wine country with Decoy by Duckhorn. Winemaker Tyson Wolf spends every vintage focused on harvesting grapes and crafting wines from the finest vineyards. Whether it's our flagship Cabernet or crisp and refreshing Rosé, Decoy has just the wine for your discerning taste. Ask for us at your local wine shop or visit decoywines.com/celebrate to locate our wines near you. Whether you're firing up the grill, hosting an alfresco get-together, or enjoying the warm summer nights, let Decoy by Duckhorn elevate your occasion.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.